the OTB Podcast Network.
How are you?
Good, lads. Thanks for having me on after Gunnosaurus.
I mean, it's tough for any of us to follow that, to be honest. Kind of impossible.
Yeah.
But we'll do our best.
I've always thought that he simultaneously mastered the art of looking sort of solemn and ridiculous in those minute silences as well. So it's a very apt tribute.
We've been asking everybody the same questions to try and make this as fair as possible. We start with the changes to last year, retirement additions, injuries, coaching changes. There's been some significant enough people missing from the Dublin panel this year from last year.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, the two retirees, Paddy Andrews and Michael Darren McCauley, are obviously two very big sort of personalities in the squad, but I think the writing was on the wall. I mean, Mick McCauley could have hung around to see if he could win a $9 Ireland medal this year, but it just wouldn't have been his style. Paul Mannion is obviously a big one, which is probably, maybe people don't fully appreciate what a loss he'd be to Dublin, because he was in a position last year where he came off the bench and Dublin won the All-Ireland so easily. But I think, you know, all things being equal, had Mannion been on the squad straight from the start when they reconvened last year, he would have been an automatic selection. And, you know, I don't think Jack McCaffrey is going to come back this year anyway. So, you know, like, they're definitely not at full strength, but obviously the big question is whether they can still, anybody can come up to the level of strength that they are at.
Can you just remind us what happened with Mannion last year? I forgot about that. I thought he had just almost moved down on the pecking order one or two spots. So he actually just came back late to training. He was injured.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the story was. I think I think it was something to do with a new job, or there was the possibility of going travelling, and he wasn't sure about coming back onto the squad. And I think, you know, he might have just missed a couple of weeks training. And at that stage, you know, Desi Farrell was very, you know, I think the same thing might have happened with Brian Howard. Again, he missed a very sort of inconsequential period of the league through injury, and sort of never regained his spot back in the team, because, you know, Desi Farrell is one of these sort of very traditionalist managers in some ways, where if you're in the team and you're doing well, that's where you're going to stay. And I think, you know, it was important for the development of Paddy Swall that he wasn't just going to drop him for Mannion. But I think all things being equal, you know, Mannion had won three All-Irelands in the three previous years. And I think, you know, with his all-round game and his athleticism and his ability to defend, you know, an extraordinary ability for a corner forward to defend, you know, I still think he's probably in the top three or four inside forwards in the country. So, no, he'd be a loss. He'd definitely be a loss. But again, like, it's you know, when a team wins the All-Ireland as emphatically as Dublin does, and they don't lose any of their, I suppose, if you want to call them starting players from the final last year, it's hard to make a case that they're sort of fatally wounded.
I totally understand that. I do think, from reading Brogan's book and listening to the podcast and just hearing everybody talk about the standards of training, that while MDMA might not have been in the team, certainly he was leading some of that stuff. Now, there's still enough of the old leaders who were there. You know, it looks like Philly McMahon's going to be there. It looks like everybody else is essentially going to be there, as far as we know, from that generation, Kevin McManaman. Like, there's enough of those, that crew who were there, who remember what it's like to taste defeats, as opposed to just the new crew who come in and go, well, it's going to be like this forever. But at the same time, there's a lot of brain power gone, and there's a lot of standards being driven and training gone.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing I think that people don't fully appreciate. You know, in Bernard's book, there's a great passage in where he's actually speaking to Paul Mannion. At this stage, like, Bernard is so far down the pecking order, he's kicking balls to himself up in the air when there's A and B's games going on. And, you know, he's taking Paul Mannion to one side and showing him a list of, like, a series of clips of Mannion's movements and match days, and trying to actually sort of optimise his movement. And, yeah, you know, Kevin McManaman even doing a lot of the visualisation stuff the night before matches. Like, that's very, very unseen. And I think we probably fall into the trap with a team like Dublin, which is very clearly kind of powered by the individuals within it as opposed to by any manager. I think we fall into the trap of maybe appraising a player's value to the squad solely on what we see, what they do on the pitch. And there is an awful lot of things that go on behind the scenes. And, you know, like, those players, there was a reason that Jim Gavin never kind of moved those players on towards the latter end of his tenure. It's because if those guys are willing to show up and, you know, do so fully understanding that they mightn't see any game time, that they might barely get off the bench for the year, they're invaluable because, you know, none of those players would be inclined to show up and mope. None of them would be inclined to show up and drag their heels. They still drive the standards on, and they still drive the young players on. So, yeah, like any sort of loss to that brigade, I think, has to damage the squad on some level. But by the same token, you know, you look at players like Owen Murchison and Brian Howard now, who've been there for a couple of All-Irelands, and, you know, the five in a row probably doesn't mean a whole pile to them because they were only there for two or three of them. You know, and they're kind of driving the thing on now at a different level. And meanwhile, you know, you have the likes of Brian Fenton and Conn O'Callaghan and Kieran Kilkenny, who basically sort of inherited those roles as the leaders in the team. So, like, I mean, they're in a very good place when you look at it like that. And as well as that, the lockdown, like 2 years in a row, they've had massive breaks before they've had to go back training. Like, that was the one thing, the one factor that has worked against All-Ireland champions in the past is, you know, going late into the year, having to go back to your club, rushing into the league and never really catching your breath. And, you know, obviously Dublin, I'm sure the players wouldn't tell you that, you know, the big break has been in any way beneficial. But, you know, physically and even from a kind of a psychological point of view, that rest has to be invaluable for them.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't thought about that as much in this context, but it makes perfect sense as well that there's a freshness then when they do get to go back training, that actually this isn't just a pain in the ass, that you've got to go back and do the stuff that you were doing. In those terms, can the team get better than it was last year?
I think they probably can, Jerry. Like, you have to remember, like, I wouldn't say that the team last year was in any way a patchwork job, because I thought Daisy Farrell did a great job last year getting that team to look so efficient, given the very, like, he had a very small window to actually work with the team as a collective. Now, he would have worked with a lot of the players prior to that, but his window for experimentation, you know, like, even the stuff that was done in the league before the big lockdown break, that was basically redundant by the time they started again. So there was, you know, some work that basically had no value to him. So, you know, he had, but as regards sort of kicking on in terms of the team's evolution, like, there's no way he could have gotten all the work done last year that he would have intended, because once the year started to go again in October or whatever it was, you know, it was bang bang, he played every week until he got to the All-Ireland final. So yeah, like, I think they can improve. They absolutely can. And I know Desi is one, like, a manager who would be constantly pushing the boundaries as to, you know, how to set up a team, what's the most efficient way of playing this game. And I've no doubt that he had sort of big ideas for that last year that he probably had to shelf just because, you know, they had to get on with the business of defending the All-Ireland. And I think this year there's definitely a much bigger scope to do that. You know, we saw small things last year. You know, there were periods of matches when Dublin would play with three or four different guys in a full forward. Sometimes Brian Fenton was in there. They constantly rotated and asked different questions of an opposition back line. But it was very hard to see from the games they played last summer where that evolution is going to come from, purely because they came up against teams, you know, in the early rounds of the championship that they were just clearly superior to, that they were just going to beat regardless. And then after that, you know, when you got to Meath and Cavan and ultimately Mayo in the All-Ireland final, all those teams kind of set up in a fairly similar way against Dublin. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the other teams come at Dublin with this year. You know, I like a lot of people, I was fascinated to see what would have happened had Kerry played Dublin last year, just because, you know, it was very obvious that what Peter Keane was doing in some of the selections was based around tackling Dublin. So, you know, if they come up against a team this year that asks different questions on them, you know, I'm sure that Desi and Dublin will have answers to it. But what that is at the moment, it's hard to know.
Like, this may seem like a stupid question considering they won the All-Ireland so comfortably last year, but does this format suit Dublin? Like, would they have won the All-Ireland by a bigger margin had it been the old format? Like, is there a chance that actually if Donegal come through Ulster, or had they come through Ulster last year, they would have actually been fully primed and they would have been better placed to actually maybe push Dublin, that they're maybe Kerry, after coming through the tough Cork game, had they won on that occasion, would have actually been better primed to maybe take on Dublin, whereas Dublin in this format, as you say, are coming through Leinster and then boom, it's a semi-final, which may be against Mayo this year. It's a very, very tough game to go into after a Leinster championship.
Yeah, well, I think the format does suit them. There's no doubt about that, because, you know, there's a higher value now. If and when you win your province, you catapult further into the championship than you did before. So, you know, by definition, like, there was always the possibility of Dublin in previous years getting a difficult draw in an All-Ireland quarter-final. Now, it didn't really materialise, but that threat was there, you know. And similarly in the Super 8s, they have an unblemished record in the Super 8s, but, you know, there was definitely a sort of confluence of different factors that you could end up in a group with Tyrone, Donegal and Kerry, for instance, and you might have to play two of them, you know. What I'm saying is, there's fewer variables now.
Yeah.
And I think we all expect Dublin to win Leinster. The degree to which they were better than Meath last year, it's very hard to see how any team could make up that separation in such a short period of time. So, we're back to kind of, you know, Mick O'Dwyer's Kerry team. It's two games to win the All-Ireland, even if they won't look at it that way. You know, effectively, I think that's what it is.
It's exactly the same. That's the thing. We really want to see them play. We want to see them play Tyrone, with Tyrone fully loaded, with McShane back from injury, and what that full forward line or forward line is going to look like with all of their superstar talent available. And we really want to see them play Kerry. And I mean, this year they're slated to play the winners of Connacht in the semi-final, so that obviously isn't going to happen this year. I do wonder, is it actually going to be next year before we properly see a full season of what Desi Farrell's Dublin really look like, Conor?
Yeah, there's definitely an argument, you know, to say, you know, we tend to base our views on Dublin around those big victories that they have over teams in Leinster. And really, we're not seeing much of them at all, because if there's anything that defines that Dublin team over the past decade, it's their ability to actually win games that they're in tight situations. But I suppose the issue is, we very rarely see them in those tight situations. But, you know, invariably they find a way out of it. So, you know, that's why the Dublin Mayo rivalry has appealed to people so much over the past 10 years, because Mayo were the one team that could put Dublin in awkward situations. Now, every single time, as it happened, Dublin managed to work themselves out of that situation. But it's thrilling to watch, you know, when they're under pressure, that they come up with that. But I think the way teams played last year, they put them under no pressure. Every team effectively played with a plus one at the back and everyone else marking on the pitch. And that just meant that Dublin could play with Robbie McDaid as a free man at the back. And, you know, he was really the only, at the back end of the championship, he was really the only, the new player at that level. And he was basically getting a free ride in terms of having to mark anybody. So, you know, they were ultra functional last year, you would have to say. And I do think it was a season, the pressure that was on Desi Farrell to deliver last year was enormous. From himself, I would imagine, more than anybody else. Because who wants to be the guy that takes over the team that won five in a row and then doesn't win it the following year?
Yeah.
But I think that he's been freed of that, I think, this year. And look, the other thing, I know people question, what's the point in winning again? But if you look at somebody like James McCarthy, who's, you know, 31 this year or whatever he is, and he's won more All-Ireland to get, and he has more than any footballer ever. And there'd be an acceptance within the Dublin squad that, you know, if it goes away from them, if they don't win, there's no guarantees they're going to sort of win it back the following year. It's certainly, they'd be the last people on earth to make that presumption. So I think while they're on top, and they most clearly were very firmly on top last year, they'll be inclined to make as much hay as they possibly can.
Do you think they've killed everybody's spirit when it comes to the real contenders around the country?
Well, I hear that argument a lot. And if it is true, and I don't think it is, but if it is true, it doesn't say an awful lot for the players in those counties, because... I spoke to Paul Geaney a couple of weeks ago for an interview, and you could tell that he was mad to get back at it again. So, it might have killed supporter spirit, because there's a sense of inevitability when they go out and play these games. But, I think for Kerry footballers and Tyrone footballers and Donegal footballers, Mayo footballers as well, everybody wants to be the team who beats Dublin. I'm sure they'll quickly afterwards move on and tell you, well, it's only a step towards winning an All-Ireland. But the prize is huge. You know, there's a reason why Tipperary's All-Ireland in 2010 was bigger than, you know, any other All-Ireland than they won. It's because they slayed the beast and they stopped the run, you know. And I think that applies to all those other teams there now. And you can't play for Kerry without having a very high sense of confidence about yourself. And it seems to be the same for Mayo as well. And, you know, I think secretly they'll all sort of believe that they can beat Dublin. But, you know, whether they do or they don't, it's very hard to predict. I think... The league would be very interesting this year. I know there's an awful lot of talk about phony wars and, you know, there's very little value on it. But, I completely disagree with that. I know there'd be very little value on actually winning the competition. But managers have been you know, racking their brains for the past 6 months about, you know, what they need to do with their team. This is their first opportunity to do it. And it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're Dublin, whether you're Kerry, whether you're the Limerick Hurlers. You know, if you go out and burn all your league matches and lose them all, it's very hard to turn it around that quickly, given how soon the championship starts after the league. So, yeah, like, we're still in lockdown. There's no supporters on the ground. There might not be a huge value in winning it. But I think as a series of kind of mini experiments, I think the league starting this week is going to be fascinating.
I've one last one. Peter Keane's comments, I think they're probably going to help the Dubs in one way, because it just makes them aware of the fact that there is this grievance being nursed by Kerry in particular.
Maybe, but I think, you know, Dublin have always sort of, in the past anyway, taken a collective sort of attitude towards things like that. And it has tended to be, you know, I know in the old days, well, not even the old days, just a few years ago, managers could kind of use something like that and you know, do the old cliched siege mentality, you know, and have fellas grit their teeth and really knuckle down. But Dublin never tend to do that, or they haven't done it under, they never did it under Jim Gavin anyway. You know, trying to use a negative thing. You know, that sort of cliche that Joe Brawley keeps repeating, that Colm Cooper said about, the thing about the Dubs is they ignore you, you know, when they're on the pitch. And that's the very difficult thing to deal with. They're a bit like that off the pitch as well. I don't think, you know, the kind of noise about the team and, you know, what other opposition managers say and what other players say, if they do pay very much attention to it, they're very good at pretending that they don't.
Do you have a player or two for us to watch this year, Conor, right off the conveyor belt?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and it's difficult. You know, I think all the sort of, all the great players, as in all the Kieran Kilkennys and Brian Fentons, and Conn O'Callaghan's, I think they've come through now. Like the next batch, I think, will probably, you know, fit in bits and pieces of the team as it sort of naturally erodes. So, like, there's nobody who you would expect that's going to come out and shoot the lights out. I know there's big expectations for Kieran Archer because he had two very good under 20 campaigns, but, you know, it's a different level now, particularly physically. And if you look at the inside forward line that he's trying to break into, you know, it's going to take him a year or two to get there. Like last year, there was a big question for Dublin, as there was in the previous couple of years, about midfield. And like during the league, Desi Farrell brought back in Craig Diaz from Kilmacud Crokes after nearly 10 years of inter-county football. Emmett O'Connell played a league game as well. He was out for a while. And ultimately, they went with Tom Lahiff from St. Jude's for the first couple of rounds of the championship. And he, I think, sort of lost his place in a bit of a reshuffle with James McCarthy for the Leinster final. So, like, there is a spot beside Brian Fenton up for grabs. Like, I think Brian Howard will probably revert to the half-forward line because, you know, again, I know he came off the bench in last year's All-Ireland final, but he kind of solves so many problems because he's such a you know, range of talents that, you know, I think wing forward suits him. So, like, you'd be looking at a couple of players who have already been there and gone away and come back, possibly Shane Carty in midfield, who, you know, has brought out a book and an autobiography recently about, you know, his struggles with depression. And you can tell in it that Desi Farrell was a very influential figure in helping him through that stage. So I would imagine that he'd be very motivated to try and get back into the team. And the other one is Padraig O'Coughey-Bourne, who was on the squad. I think he was even on the bench for the drawn 2020 All-Ireland final against Kerry. And then last year he was dropped from the squad. But, you know, he's a big, big unit. He's 6'5". He doesn't need to fill out. And he's well able to move around the park. And I think, midfield is definitely a spot for Dublin. Probably need to nail down a partner for Brian Fenton in the long term. And to me, they would be the two sort of obvious candidates.
All right, it still sounds like they're pretty stacked as things stand. That's not a bad team. Conor, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
Conor McKeown, you can read his stuff in the Irish Independent.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.